Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Fairbanks City Council regular work session this Tuesday, October 3rd, 2023. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Prus.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Ms. Rogers.
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle is absent today. Ms. Tidwell is absent today. Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
And Mr. Wingstein.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. First item on the agenda is ordinance number 6263, an ordinance amending the General Code Section 2-119, Order of Business. If you look on your desk, you're going to see a proposed substitute that we put together due to the issue at our last meeting. There is what I thought were enough changes to the ordinance that if we substitute this on Monday's meeting, I'd like to have another second reading on this because of the changes. And also with that thought, we've made changes to protect ourselves in case we are Zoom phone bombed again. And anyway. So, Madam Clerk, would you go over the, or Mr. Chard, would you go over the changes we made?
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. Madam Clerk, please jump in if I'm misstating something. So there's essentially three changes here that we're looking at. The first one changes the public comment time period. So in the code now, it says that the comment period will end no later than 7:30 p.m. The issue here is if ceremonial matters or if things at the beginning of the meeting take longer than otherwise they have in the past, that it might crowd out that public comment time period. And so in addition to the other changes that we're proposing in this, we're changing the fixed time deadline of 7:30 p.m. and just inserting a time period of 30 minutes for the public comment. This is how Juneau does it. I talked with their attorney. We've been talking over the week with different attorneys across the state on how best to deal with the Zoom thing. I will point out that the period not to exceed 30 minutes, there was some discussion about whether or not 30 minutes was adequate and what to do if there are more commenters than the 30-minute period would allow. The clerk's office, very much appreciate this, went back over the course of the last year and looked at every single public comment period, and our average public comment is 17 minutes, so we think 30 minutes will be sufficient. But of course, if the public comment extends past the 30 minutes, it would be the prerogative of the council to vote to set the rules aside and extend that if necessary. The second change is on page 2, the top of page 2. We think that this is really going to be the one that's going to safeguard against what happened Monday night. This is something that was done down in Ellensburg, Washington. They also were one of the lucky ones to get attacked, similar to how we were. And they changed their code so that the citizens' comment period is focused on matters concerning city business or over which the city has or the council has control. This is very carefully worded because First Amendment protections in the form that we're talking about are limited in their restrictions of content. So you can talk about the time pretty easily, you can talk about the place, but once you start talking about what people say during a public comment period, it gets a little dicey, and we have to be very careful that we're not infringing on folks' First Amendment rights or overcorrecting. Because this change has been in practice down in a different municipality, pretty comfortable with it, we are a limited public forum in this space when we're talking about First Amendment rules, and the focus of the citizens' comments in the meeting are things that concern the city and concern things that the council has control over. If someone were to speak and they were to provide comment that was wildly off this mark, it would be the chair's discretion to correct them, to say that, you know, the purpose of this is that you're to provide comments for the city council so that we can improve the governance of the city, things that we have control over, things about the city's business. That is a discretionary call by the chair, which the council as a body can call into question and overrule if they feel necessary. But after a warning to the speaker, if they continue on the path that they're on, the comments would be deemed not germane to that point of the agenda and therefore disruptive to the purpose of the meeting. The chair would then have the discretion to disconnect or discontinue that person's comments. That individual would still have the ability to provide their comments directly to City Council through a lot of different manners, including email. There are some really good instructions that the clerk maintains on our website for how they can communicate to council. So we're pretty confident that this will give the chair the discretion that he needs to be able to stop any disruptions to a meeting while also not overcorrecting. The third and final change is the original change that folks discussed earlier, and that's just eliminating the duplicate council member comment period. So you see on the bottom of page 2 and then over onto page 3 that the discussion items, which was previously item 13, has now been combined into what is currently item 14, committee reports, council member comments. With those three changes, we think that this will improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the meeting and minimize disruptions.
We immediately met last Tuesday in regards to the issues that happened on our previous meeting. And we looked and said, how can we put up barriers without taking away rights? That's what this is meant to do. I saw that we had the ordinance in front of us and said this is a perfect time to propose a substitute. And Danny and Mr. Chard worked fairly well on this for a week and then presented it to me yesterday with all the changes. I said, let's do it. Mr. Clayworth, we did not know if you'd still want to be a sponsor of this because of the substitute changes, if you'd like to, or if anyone would like to, Mr. Marnie too, Ms. Rogers, and we'll probably get the candidate who's going to win by the most votes tonight, Mr. Ringstead, on record too. So are there any other questions on this? Mr. Ringstead.
I think what we're saying now, you get up to 3 minutes. If we have a lot of people show up, do we have the flexibility to say, okay, we've got a lot of people, we're going to be done in 30 minutes, everybody gets 2 minutes?
No, you don't get that, but what you do get is it's called breaking the rules. You get to extend the public comment period by a majority vote of the city council.
Yeah. Where does it say if you have 3 minutes?
It's in our past ordinance that I think it was 2017, 2018 when we did that, and we moved it from 5 minutes to 3 minutes. Jerry was a big proponent of 5 minutes. I was a big proponent of 3 minutes, and we had a guy come in and speak like Elvis for 5 minutes, and that swayed my vote. Madam Clerk.
Mr. Ringstad, it's further down in that section. It's just not appearing in this ordinance because it's not being changed, but it's in subsection H of that 119. It states that all citizen comment periods, including public hearings, will be limited to 3 minutes per person.
Mayor, could I add a comment to
that? And Mr. Chard has a comment, then we'll go to Mr. Marnie.
Just to extend that a bit, it is very, very important that we treat everyone the same and that we stick to the rules. So one of our recommendations is that the extension of someone's three-minute period, we stop that practice. It's the problem that you run into is if you give one person an extension of time and don't give it to the other person, it calls into question why the body is doing that, and if it's a content thing, and if we're supporting one speaker over another speaker, what one person's saying over what another person's saying. We just have to be very careful with the content and that we treat everyone exactly the same. So because the code explicitly says no more than 3 minutes, our recommendation is that we stick to the language in the code and give no more than 3 minutes.
Now, with that, you have the opportunity to ask questions and extract more information from a testifier if you'd want to. So there is ways for you to personally extend their speech if you want to go down that and ask specific questions. I've done it before, like, what else did you want to mention, or things like that, just a way to extract it. But again, we have to now, due to last Monday's issue, be quite exact on how we treat everyone and what time they start at. So that's what these are. Ms. Rogers.
That's something that I've been aware of, that equal for everybody. I've raised my hand for people that I didn't agree with at all, but they weren't done. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to not have the other information that they were preparing to give us. So the idea then of saying, do you have anything else to speak, that question allows me to bring the rest of that into.
I would frame it in a question to of something to extract more information. But yeah. You can question them and work through that process.
Okay. But I would encourage everyone to allow people to speak their full comment rather than us cut them off, because we've had the problems with other locations where we've been cut off, and we find it not very user-friendly. And so I hope we don't get into that circumstance, because I think one of the things that we have done really well in how we receive people's comments here is that we allow a lot of information to come to us.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, how important is the address thing? Because I know that when we got that barrage, mm-hmm. only one had an address. So are we going to remain lax on that? Or
Madam Clerk?
There's been a lot of discussion in recent years over whether residential addresses are confidential. We err on the cautious side. We ask for their area of residence when they sign up in the hallway. I think the mayor asks for their area of residence when they testify. That generally tells us if they're a city resident or not. But we do not ask for addresses. They can provide it if they choose, but there is also a disclaimer on that sign-up sheet that says this is a public document, because I have had people request that document as part of a public record request before. So they need to know that whatever they put on that sheet is public information.
Ms. Rogers.
I really appreciate the fact that it's just an area. I know in my very first couple of years here, we had some people who were very threatening. I regularly submitted information to the police chief about things, and I think that we owe the persons who come and sit here that same extra attention to their personal regard, because you never know when someone is going to use that information in a wrong way, and I don't see how it really is necessary to know exactly which corner they're on, or so on and so forth, as long as, like Ms. Snyder says, that we know they're part of the city and they're a resident of the city. Or if they're even, if they're a visitor to the city, there's a lot of ways of saying who they are and what their concern is without leaving them vulnerable, I guess is probably the best way. And we did have some problems with that.
Mr. Clearworth.
It's a question for the city attorney. one meeting some years ago, and I think both the mayor and June were here. We walked in, and there's a room full of people, and are wondering what's going on. And it was a move to make Fairbanks a sanctuary city. Now, in your ruling on that, would they have a right to speak because it has something to do with the city of Fairbanks, or are they way off topic? Just an example.
So I appreciate the question, because these are going to be the difficult choices that need to be made, and you know, we don't want to be making them in the moment. That would be, of course, you know, the chair's discretion on whether or not the comment was in the city's business, something the city had control over or not. And if the chair felt that that comment was not germane to that point of the agenda, then they would rule so, and the body of the council would be able to call into question the discretion of the chair. So ultimately, it's actually the chair and the council, I think, that have that call. I would advise the council to use this language very carefully. I think that what it needs to center on is whether or not what is happening is disruptive to the meeting and to the purpose of the meeting. So if, you know, folks felt like there was a general kind of disruption like what happened on Monday, where it's clearly not within the city's business, clearly not something the city has control over, the chair ruled, the council, you know, supported that ruling, I think that you'd be in safe ground there. I think that when you start using that rule more liberally and saying, you know, that's out of bounds or, you know, whatever, and the council and the chair both agree with that, it's a risk scale. I mean, you open yourself up to a claim that you're somehow infringing on their First Amendment rights, and then you'd have to argue that in front of a judge and, you know, deal with the consequences. Councilmember Cleworth, on something like whether or not the city of Fairbanks should be a sanctuary city, you know, without the rest of the content or facts, I would say that is a decision that the city of Fairbanks and the city council should take up. Whether or not I agree with that or not, that position is a completely different matter. But the topic itself, I don't think the council would be well advised to limit the content of that.
Checks and balances. With that example, Mr. Cleworth, I would say yes. And then Mr. Marnie could say, I want to challenge that and have a motion. Mr. Ringstead could do a second, and then you'd have a debate, and then you could discuss whether that was content or not under this ordinance, and then you'd vote on it. So there's checks and balances in this for you. But from that example, my original thought would be, yes, that does involve, if you look at the ordinance, it does involve over which the council has control. You would have control if you wanted to make a resolution to make Fairbanks a sanctuary city. You have that power. You don't have power to investigate 9/11 per se. It's nothing that you're ruling over. So.
And then my last comment is, it kind of begs the question to me. One of my pet peeves is when a council member introduces a resolution that's not germane to the city at all. An example would be, we're really, really unhappy with Florida for infringing on the Everglades. And we got a resolution. We've had things like that to tell Washington, D.C. or what to do or things like that that were not germane to the city. And I've always felt that we shouldn't go that far astray, but I know that's not a part of this. That would be something else, but I kind of think that what's good for them should be good for us to some degree.
Well, you know, the Everglades in Alaska are connected by their birds in flight. So how do you decide that we're not part of the rest of the world?
We'll move on.
With that, you can use the same argument here.
Okay.
Yes, I do have a huge file on that sanctuary city thing.
Yeah.
We listen to a lot of people.
That was one item. I answered every email. I had 158 emails, and I answered every one of them. Anyway, are there any other questions in regards to the proposed substitute? Seeing none, we're going to move on to item number two, ordinance number 6264, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 74-152 by increasing the tobacco excise tax, and it will be going into its second reading. And Mr. Marnie, you're here with that. Is there anything you want to go over?
Well, there is, and it kind of pertains to the very last page, the talking points page, and the bottom paragraph that says need for amending the ordinance. And this is from the American Cancer Health, or I can't remember where it's from, but they recommend that 20% is not enough deterrence for our youth to buy e-cigarettes and vape pens and et cetera. But they recommend that it be moved up to 33%. And if you look at the chart of charges from the other municipalities within the state, they tax it at a higher rate besides what we tax tobacco at. So that's the only thing I'd like to bring up for discussion. If I don't know what other council members.
So your thought is that you're not being too onerous on this to stop, to punish the industry.
Yes.
Your intent is to, from the very beginning, my interpretation is yours and Sue's intent was to reduce real estate taxes by
yes.
increasing cigarette tax, because this will not be a revenue enhancement for the city of Fairbanks.
Yes, along with trying to save lives and try to save our youth from getting unhealthy habits.
Okay. Ms. Rogers.
I agree with the statements here from the cancer organization. I've sat in on many, many, many meetings discussing this issue, and it is that last comment there where you're trying to save lives and you're trying to deter our youth going into the habits that last for a lifetime and create health problems for themselves and their families. It's really not a pretty situation when you start looking at all of the circumstances of health. And when we talk about this strictly as a money issue, I think we missed the whole point. And most of the letters that are coming to me about this issue right now are discussing the money issue. And I think that the health of our community is where I want to keep my focus.
Mr. Cleworth.
Lonnie, I don't buy cigarettes or e-vapes or anything, but if I were to buy a pack of cigarettes today before all this happens, do you know what it would cost? $10 a pack, roughly? Anybody know?
I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. I've never, you know.
Yeah, me neither. Because I lived in a house full of people that smoked.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm just wondering what the e-vapes would cost as compared to it. And so when you say here that the void unintended consequence of driving consumers, I'd kind of like to know what the disparity is to justify that statement. Says they're cheaper, but I don't know that they are. So that's my only comment. I don't know what the numbers are.
Well, I'll do. I guess I'll go buy a couple of stores.
Well, try to go to the cheapest store, though.
I'll try to provide that and work it in some kind of a amendment or something for next Monday. But I don't. Margarita, do you have time to run some numbers for me? Did you get that done, perchance?
On the 33%?
Yeah.
I didn't have the 33%, but I know that every 5% that you increase, it will increase it by 55 cents total. But overall. Yeah.
So, and when you buy an e-vape, How do you buy those things? In packages, like cigarettes?
From what I understand, you buy a, it's like in a pen form, and then you buy cartridges that, you know, that you insert in.
Okay, so you're,
that's your tobacco.
You use the same pen, you're just buying cartridges.
Yeah, and each cartridge, what I've been told, is worth a pack of cigarettes, equivalent.
One cartridge is equivalent of a pack?
To a pack of cigarettes.
I guess I feel out of place because I've never bought cigarettes and I've never bought anything on eBay.
Yeah.
So I'm out of touch with this.
I just would like a clarification, and we're only looking at the e-vapes, increasing that to 33% or 35%?
I would like both, you know, to have both discussed or looked at.
All?
They suggest a minimum of 33%.
For are we looking at just increasing one component?
E-cigs and the vape.
Oh, okay. So just that one component.
Don't keep the cigarettes at the 20.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And tobacco.
Thank you
20.
For the clarification.
Could you clarify that again for me, Mr. Marty? Keep the cigarettes.
Keep
at
the cigarettes and I think there's the other column is tobacco. And then increase the electronic, you know, the.
So you want to keep the regular sales at what it's currently, or are you going to increase that to 20%?
Up to 20%, and okay. then look at what advantage we have for increasing the e-vape and the e-cigs up to 33.
Okay. Ms. Rogers.
I can contact Emily Neenan with the cancer group. She lives in Anchorage, and ask her to call in and testify at our meeting. She can give you a lot of technical information on the vapes and that sort of thing. The questions that you're asking, I know she can answer it. The other thing is that we have several principals here in our school district that have testified with the legislature about this issue on vaping. And I'd be happy to contact a few of them, too. Or if you know somebody who's working with the schools.
Well, I know a couple of teachers, but they're not privy. They don't, I guess they
I think
to the restrooms and use, you know, I don't know if they're odorless or exactly what, but it's being used in our high school bathrooms.
Oh, very definitely. Like I said, they're calling the legislature about this issue. And if people in our community are calling the legislature about an issue, there's an issue.
Mr. Clearworth, do you have any other questions? Your microphone is on.
Oh, not really. It's just a magic point, though. It's kind of like this marijuana issue. The legal growers are ticked because the taxes are high enough that the black market's becoming bigger and bigger. And we knew that. They knew. It makes me chuckle a little bit because when we were asked to vote on this in the first place, they said this would eliminate the black market. And, of course, it did not. And it's the same here. If you're hoping to get people to quit, just like the chief of police said, I order my cigars through the mail. I guess they can all get it through the mail, too. And if they just find a place where the taxes are cheaper or non-existent, then they can kind of evade the whole thing, too. And so you kind of wonder what you're accomplishing. That's all. I'm just wondering out loud.
Thank you very much. We'll move on. Next, we'll go to Resolution 50A3, a resolution stating the City of Fairbanks legislative and capital priorities for 2024. It's not introduced yet. So this can be added on to whichever you want to, and we can go through it. We've had a work session on it already, and we readjusted the capital priorities to, one, the backup generator, to design and establish an interior regional housing crisis stabilization center. And that's because the state of Alaska got $53 million, and we want to have a portion of it and not see it piecemealed out. We believe that we can do something better with it right now. Is that correct, Brenda? Okay. Is there anything you want to add to that? Since you're here, not voting at this moment for Mr. Ringstead.
Sure. I have been in contact with the trust, and they have mentioned that $53 million may already be tied up with the Department of Revenue into a fund, like the permanent fund dividend, that's just only going to draw $1 to $2 million. I would still like to leave it on there and see what we can get from the state, and then try to get funds from other entities as well. I just went to Anchorage and toured their complex care shelter, Brother Francis, and then their new navigation center. And it was just a really good reminder that, you know, you can go to private insurance companies and talk about how much they're paying out in the ER and how much this would save them at a stabilization center. So, you know, go to other funders. But I just did want to add that information that I've been advised that they may not be taking large portions out of it. Although we still want to ask, so.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Ringstad?
So when we were talking about this last time, I mean, I think the number I recall was $10 million, and it seemed to me that you weren't real clear exactly what you wanted yet, you know, what would work. So I guess I'm nervous about throwing out a number and saying $10 million, and maybe we need 2.5. At what point do you think we're going to be ready to know what facility we really need and can do in terms of trying to go forward with more of a hard number and a real need or a real issue?
So in my mind, this would be the number if we wanted to buy land and have a capital project from the ground up for a real hub that has a stabilization center and then other resources around it. And then kind of what we were talking about last time was if we were not to receive the funds for a full capital project, that there's a backup plan of rehabbing an already existing building, which might be more than the $2.5 million. So my thought is to go for the full ideal hub and see if we can get those funds.
Well, I guess from a legislature's perspective, looking at it and say, well, okay, we don't have a hard proposal. Here's the drawings of what you're going to build. So here's $3 million. Go do something with it. And that you wind up with a different discussion. And it makes it hard for the legislators to commit to a big chunk of money like that, which may be a major portion of what we get for capital budget around here, when we don't have something solid on paper, as this is exactly what we need and want. So I think it leaves us more vulnerable to criticism.
We had a Mr. Glover, go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say, Mayor, we've only been included in the governor's budget one time that I can remember, and we got lucky back in 2011 or so, and got $5 million bucks put in for roads. But you can kind of sidestep this process if you get the governor in a good mood. And can get put into the budget too. So I would encourage you or the staff, if you think you have an inroad with the governor, to maybe try and pick one of these big ticket items and see if you can get it included into the governor's budget.
We met with Representative Will Stapp, and he is putting all these to the governor for the governor's budget. I'll be meeting personally with the governor too. And also, as we discussed last work session, I'll be going down to Washington, D.C. also for these accounts. These are our public works capital projects with the Island Homes and the fire station. Those are items that are critical, so we go after, just like we do with the Polaris building, multiple sources of revenue to do the project. And when I go down to both Juneau and to Washington, D.C., we're going to have basically very detailed reports of cost estimates, design on both of those projects. We'll be working with Brenda in regards to design. She's looking at real estate already. She tells me there's a vacant property over here that would work, or this one over here, or she's looking at a piece of real estate that could be remodeled for it. And we have to have, I wouldn't say certification, but a very good discussion with the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority in regards to, if it is there, are you going to fund the operations of this? We have to have funding certification from them for a while. Mr. Ringstead.
Question, Brenda. In this one, as I see the list here, we don't put a dollar amount, which it strikes me as what we're saying is we have an issue we need to deal with. We think it's a priority issue, but we don't know the exact cost. So at least you've put it on the list. Are you comfortable with doing it that way? I mean, at least we're on the list and we're trying to narrow down exactly what your cost is.
Yes, I think in discussions with the Chief of Staff, you know, if we don't put Fairbanks front and center with the trust and with the state, they'll just build up Anchorage. And so this is a real move to say, you know, Fairbanks was in the original study of three communities that needed a stabilization center, and they've already gone ahead and moved with Juneau, and they're looking at Kotzebue. I'm just kind of skipping Fairbanks, so that, you know, we do want the stabilization center. I want to have more exact numbers as well, and the consultant, RI International, is supposed to be able to give those numbers, and the trust often pays for them then to work that out. And then I'm going to Arizona next week to tour several, and I'm going to be asking those questions as well. I've only toured one. That was the one that was 5,200 square feet. But I want to see, there's a new one that's just for youth, you know, how much that cost, what their volume is as well, and get more of those numbers, and then the design that we want from it and what we think works for Fairbanks.
Yes, Frank,
to me, that's a good approach, and put it on the list, and as we have those discussions, we just need to put that as part of the discussion, is that she's working to identify numbers and get she's doing her homework. So get it on the list and get it going, and be ready to do that.
Ms. Rogers.
And I agree with John, and I know Brenda is working diligently on all of this, but one of the things we need to do is be supportive of all of her hard work and mention this as often as possible with any source that's able to contribute to this. And that's all of those offices and the governor and wherever, you know. It's just a...
What we're able to do with our... I'm sorry.
You can't let the circumstance of other things get in the way of continually conversing about our needs. And I'm sorry to say, so many times I've witnessed conversations where people were supposedly discussing resources and investments and circumstances of new improvements in our community when they were in Juneau or at trust meetings or whatever. And we don't necessarily have a continuum of conversation where each time we're adding to the information that they have so that their interest grows and their understanding grows. Their interest can only grow if their understanding grows. And we've got all of this wonderful support here, and we need to be supportive about carrying that message. So,
Mr. Marney.
Well, I think we should all be on board on this, so I would like to add my name as a sponsor.
Certainly.
To this, if not all council.
Yeah,
maybe
it's
swing,
yeah,
a little bit more weight, maybe.
Yep, we'll do that. Also, what we're doing with this specific item that we've targeted is we're letting our representatives, our interior delegation, know that there's a $53 million pot that came in that's dedicated for something like this. and we are targeting that. It's available. So could you go get it for us or get a specific amount that we can work with for Brenda? At the same time, Brenda's putting together their plan of operations on this. So this sort of happened quite fast, but quite fortuitous with us. So we're on it, and we'll keep you thoroughly informed as we go along.
Well, I happened to talk to Will also last Friday, so he's a go-getter.
Yep, he is. Anything else? Looking at our legislative priorities, 1 through 4 did not change from last year. Number 5, that was a thought of mine. Number 6, again, from Brenda and June. Number 7, that was from the chief here and from Mr. Ringstead and Mr. Marnie, I believe, on that. Number 8, that was from the chief. They have to take a lot of time to video on the video, and for people not associated with what's going on, remove them or blacken out their faces so they're not identifiable. And then number 9, that's something that we looked at and was added. And then the review of the PERS. They're talking about having PERS and TERS again. Mr. Ringstead.
So we have number 3 as PERS and TERS, and we have number 10. We're having a lot of this discussion around the state about we need defined benefits. And politically speaking, the first thing that defined benefits comes, well, that's the old system. In my mind, defined benefits, I can write you a defined benefits. It says you get $20 a month for the rest of your life. It's defined. You know, people aren't saying what they really want. And it's, to me, it's kind of a very broad subject. You get one side saying they want the old Tier 1 system, another side saying, no, can't have defined benefits. Somewhere we need to get in the middle and decide what works and where. I think we can kind of maybe take, rather than have two different bullets here on defined or on PERS system, somewhere what we got to figure out is there a different system? And I don't know when it was 20 years ago when we went to the Tier 4 part, 15 years ago, whenever that was. You know, maybe it's time that we look and ask them to say, do some homework, do a study, find out, you know, figure out what is doable. Because when they come out with something for all the state employees, it's going to be coming right down our path, too.
We have a couple people with their hands raised. We'll go with the chief first. Item 3 was from the chief, and he'll expand upon that one.
Yeah, so the two items here are actually somewhat different. Item 3... is my solution for part of our work issue or our employment issue that we have right now. And it's not just within the city of Fairbanks. It's within the state of Alaska. My wife works for the university. They can't find people. But we have this big group of people that live inside the state of Alaska that have retired after 20 or 30 years with the state that can't come back and take any of these jobs because they have to pause their retirement in order to do that. So I think it's a very easy fix for the legislature to allow those Tier 1, 2, and 3 employees to retire, continue to collect their retirement through the PERS system, and come back under the Tier 4 system. That way they're still paying into the Tier 3, 1, 2, and 3 system. They're still funding that. There's no unfunded liability with it. They're still putting money into the 401k, for the other retirement system, and it gives us the opportunity to tap into this plethora of employees that we know are good because they worked for 20 or 30 years and retired from the state. It doesn't necessarily have to be police, fire, but anywhere along the PERS system, those guys can fit in. You know, like, for instance, my dad worked for university forever. If I wanted to retire and go work at the university, can't do it unless something like this takes place. So there's some other benefits to it. I think if you implement it sooner than later, you can get some of the Tier 3 employees to retire sooner, which means that their defined benefit payout wouldn't be as high. You could avoid some of the medical costs if they don't go to 25. So there's some cost-saving benefits to the state as well, I believe. And under number 9, the PERS going back to a defined benefit system, they've actually been working on that for about 8 years now. When I was with the union president and the union, PSEA was working with a bunch of legislators to go back to a defined benefit retirement system. And, you know, they've done studies, they've done research on what they can afford and what, you know, how that can all work. They haven't come up with a solid plan that everybody's in agreement upon. You know, if I had it my way, I'd say let's go back to Tier 3 if they could figure out how to make it sustainable for, you know, from here on out. You know, I think looking at the public safety side, that's one of the big issues that we have right now is the Tier 4 system is a 5-year vestment, and then you can go and take that money and go do whatever you want. At least with the defined benefit system, it was a 20-year retirement plan. And when you got to year 5, you're like, oh, man, I can do 15 more years of this, or I can go somewhere else and do 30 more years. That's a pretty easy decision. And, you know, then by year 10, you're there. You're not going anywhere. So, those are my thoughts.
Any questions, Mr. Leeworth?
Number 3, I don't have a problem with. We used to hire back retirees under contract, and then I guess the state said we were being illegal doing that. I mean, ideally, that's the way to do it. But this is, I think, the second best methodology. You hire them in under Tier 4, but you're still paying medical on top of medical that they're already getting, which is kind of a waste of money to some degree. It'd be neat if you could expand this to say that we have the right to contract with them. And back then, they wouldn't get benefits. They would just get salary because they didn't need the benefits. They already had them. So I kind of wonder if, you know, if we're dreaming here, maybe we should ask for the ability to do that because as an either or. Either way, it benefits you. Number 10, I do have heartburn with. I went to the presentation along with Lonnie and June the other night, and the gist of the presentation for going back to a DB program was retention. At least they hope that would be the result of it, is retention. And I give them credit. They said, we're not sure it'll work. But in this day and age, with everyone scrambling for employees, I'm not sure that's the answer, you know, throwing money at something. But be that as it may, that was what I'd say 90% of the presentation was. It was light on the particulars of the plan itself and the two very real problems with it. But I don't think we want to recommend for them to review the PERS retirement system with ensuring fiscal certainty for municipalities. If you're going to a DB program, there is no way you can ensure fiscal insurity, because the fatal flaw of the DB program is you're making a legal promise to pay to an employee that you cannot get out of. State constitution backs it up. You've got to pay it regardless of the ability to earn that money. So if it goes into the red, you still have to pay it. If you go back to it, any DB program, you're gambling. It's just pure and simple. You're gambling on the come of the stock market. If this country goes into, heaven help us, a severe depression similar to the 30s, we're cooked. Or even a sustained recession, we're cooked. And it's going to increase the debt of the state of Alaska, and that's going to spill over onto us, the municipalities. The only way that they can fix that, the DB program, is to get the discount rate to a reasonable rate. 7.3% is not a reasonable rate. It's not sustainable. And the other one is including overtime and computing the base rate for an employee to retire under. in police and fire, there's a lot of overtime. It's just a part of the job. And when we have employees that can make more overtime, thinking of the fire department here, than base salary, then they're going to get a retirement that far supersedes an employee in the city, like, you know, city clerk or CFO or somebody who doesn't get that overtime. Is that fair? No, not in the least. And that's one of the abuses. I don't know how the actuary or the arm board can even try and figure out what their liability might be with all the overtime that comes in on. So those are the built-in problems. They were not addressed the other night at that forum, and it wasn't really the forum to do it in. But one thing they did say that I found was really curious, for half the presentation they said that they cannot have Social Security, can't have it, absolutely. And then finally somebody asked the question and said, why not? Well, you can have it, but you have to jump through all these hurdles to get it. And Social Security is a DB program. It's not a very good one, but it's DB. And when I've talked to firefighters in the past on it, I said, you know, if you really want to go back to DB, let's get you back into Social Security. If that's what you want. Well, we don't want Social Security. But here you have a DB program that the onus isn't on the state of Alaska, it's on the federal government. And the city could supplement it with a 401k on top of it and still be less than 22 cents on the dollar. So if there was a direction to go where you were looking at a DB program, then give it what the rest of us have to pay, which is Social Security, and get people back into that and then supplement it. And you have both.
Madam Clerk, you had a few comments?
Oh, just a couple of notes that Ms. Sprinkle had added new number 9. Ms. Tidwell added new number 10, and that's why those are on here. Unfortunately, they're not here to speak to them, but I just wanted to clarify that's where those came from.
Mr. Ringstead.
This has been kind of an interesting one to watch over 45 years. Because with the, I think you're right with the Social Security thing, Jerry. The only thing in the discussions that I remember at the time was when the state gave up the Social Security piece, they knew that Tier 1 retirement system was so fat that it was worth giving it up. They could have kept it, and a lot of employees are now saying, I wish I had it. Well, that was a decision that was made a long time ago to give up Social Security. I think it was a mistake. They could have had partly defined benefits and another system with it and done pretty well and probably still be doing pretty well. But I think that's an option, and I think the discussion that I have heard is largely putting sideboards on it, trying to keep it in a narrow lane, and I think we need to open the discussion and get more specific about ideas of what might work, what might not work. And I think most of that discussion is going to take place at the state level. But I think we need to be careful that you get a political solution to something in an election year that we got to just swallow. And that would be painful for the city. I don't expect we would win that.
Mr. Clayworth.
I'm not sure what you're saying.
I mean, the politics of a retirement system is, okay, I'm going to give the employees everything they want, or I'm going to give them nothing. And political solutions don't make good economic solutions a lot of times. And that's what I see coming as a political solution, not an economic one. There's very little discussion about exactly what do you want to do? Does it pencil out? What's it going to cost us, like you say, in the future? You know, I think, you know, going back into the Social Security does give them the defined benefits, and you can have Social Security and some public retirement. You can do both. There's different ways of doing it, but all we're saying is defined benefits, no defined benefits. And that's not a healthy debate. And what that leads me to is the legislature very easily could come out and say, here's a political solution. They pass something in election year,
that may or may not do anything and may or be a, may be a disaster for us. So be careful what you wish for. You might just get it. You put something on here, you have no idea. It's going to be a crapshoot.
Well, if you look at it, we have 10 items and three of them are focused on the PERS system. Now, if you look at number one, it sort of doesn't, it's sort of opposite of number 10. So are we going to take a stand where, hey, we have real concerns. We're paying 22% right now. We're paying 22% in the future. And number 10 is take a look at it again and make fiscal certainty. And what Mr. Ring said this said here is you're not going to get fiscal certainty because this is going to be a political decision. So do you want number 10 in there? Take a look at that. Mr. Cleworth.
Yeah, I would prefer it not, but if it is in there, then I would prefer to give it guidelines.
Well, it's put in there by Ms. Tidwell, so I think before you remove it, we should have that discussion at council. Mr. Marnie.
Well, the thing last Tuesday, at least to me, we should have a conversation on it. I mean, it opened the door. You know, this is not going to be done in a year or less. This is a long trek that I think we're going to have, but at least the door's open so we can talk about it. According to them, the state is really hurting on staffing right now, and I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, that's been going on for a long time. I mean, that's nothing new. It's the school district is. Everybody is hurting on staffing. It's not unique to them. So, you know, what we have out here, what really bothers me is that our government, in its infinite wisdom, says, everybody out there, you have to pay Social Security. As a self-employed individual, like the two of us, we have to pay both Social Security, the employee and the employer's share. So we're getting hit to the tune of about 15 cents on the dollar out of my own pocket for that. I have no choice. I can't get into the state retirement system. I can't get into a DB program that they're offering and say, well, I don't want my Social Security system anymore. I'm stuck with it. We have to have it. But government exempted itself from the system. You can get, these state retirement systems or civil service or something of that nature. Is that equitable? Is it fair? Of course not. It's not. Because we don't have the option to get in, but they have the option to get out. And if you want a DB program, it's there. There's no risk. It's called Social Security. No risk to the state of Alaska, no risk to the municipality. So when you say we want to have discussions, I've had discussions with the proponents of it. They don't want to budge off that discount rate. They don't want to budge off the overtime inclusion. There's not much of a discussion to be had. And like you say, it's going to be done at Juno level two, but hopefully with our input. Anyway, I mean, is the way we're doing this is that we can all put in on anything we want here and then whittle it down on Monday night? Is,
yes.
Is that what we are? Okay.
Yes. You can add, subtract. Mr. Ringstead.
If we're going to Juno and saying, okay, here's our list, they're not going to pass us three different PERS bills. You know, if they do something, it's going to be one very narrow or one very omnibus type bill. And I think we ought to think about getting a solid statement that might just address PERS rather than having three different points.
Well,
we can roll them all into one, but say, here's things. I think this is kind of where Jerry was going, saying, okay, here's things we think are important in the discussion,
mm-hmm.
and put those into more of a focused package of these kind of points as opposed to.
I think that number one and number
three
are mutually exclusive. Number three is for rehires. Number one is we're afraid that you're going to raise our rate because you can. And we don't want that. Those two I'd like to keep in there as they're set. Whatever you want to do with number three, it's council's idea. You want to add that to number one or number three, or keep it as number 10, or remove it, or remove one and three. But I think that one and three should be stay mutually exclusive if they're in there. Now, on October 23rd, I believe, is when we have the legislative interior delegation here for work session, which will be on this. Yeah, so, and that's where we have this discussion with them. If you look at what we've discussed, it's most of it's been on PERS and then a little bit on Brenda's idea. Everything else we're pretty solid on. Mr. Ringstead.
The only other on these others, I think, number five, I like that, but I'm not sure I like the last phrase.
However you want to address it.
5 years. I'm thinking more like 50.
You know, that was
just prioritize the UAF.
Mr. Ringstead, it's a thought that I had, and I would so appreciate your thoughts on this and how you would want to amend it or change it. But it's just one of those thoughts I had, and sort of getting mad about what things might be built in other towns and not taking care of what we need up here. Anything else before we move on? Seeing none, we're going to go to the final. Well, yes.
We've got Island Homes on here, and I commented the other day that, you know, other than what Jerry said, I really don't know much about what we're going to spend $20 million on an Island Home. I've not had one person in Fairbanks outside of this group bring up Island Homes that needs $20 million. I think we need a little more information for us newer members of the council. I have no idea. $20 million and it's kind of hard to say I support it when I don't even know what it is.
For the last 2 years, we've had resolutions of support for for federal funding grants on Island Homes. And both. Mr. Ringstead, I guess we're just going to have to inform you. Only if you're reelected. No, I want you to work hard today waving signs. Ms. Rogers.
Let me add something to that comment, because I think that's important across the board for all discussions, is that, yes, we've been working on Island Homes for a long time, and we all sort of know what's going on with that. However, new people don't necessarily, and it doesn't matter what the topic is. I think we need to always remember that there's new ears and that we need to inform in that context. Thank you for bringing that up.
Mr. Marney.
Well, my question is, have we polled that neighborhood to see if they want it? I mean, to me, their lives are going to be uprooted for probably 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And are they willing to put up with that?
This was a targeted neighborhood before my term started here, and it was after I was on city council. There is that interim period where they did this. So that data, I do not know, but we'll have Bob give you a presentation on it. And, and it was one of those neighborhoods where the utility company, Golden Heart, they're basically half the component, because they need to go in there and upgrade their water and sewer systems. So when they saw that we were doing this, our original one, I believe, was 9 or $10 million. And they came on and said, okay, now if we can go in with you, this is a $20 million project. So I know they need to do it. They're looking at it. So if you're going in and doing the streets, why not do the utility upgrades too? But it's a report, a presentation that will be given to you, so you can take a look at it and get that information for you. We'll have that at our next work session. Yeah.
Can I add something to that? Because there was a question about whether people really wanted this. In discussion a few years back, we generally had those meetings here in this room, and that comment similarly was brought to attention, and the neighborhood meetings with show and tell type of a meeting were brought to the neighborhoods, and so one would be at the J.P. Jones Center, or if it was for Island Homes, it would be an area that was closer to the neighborhood. And so that kind of care is being taken in how we contact the people of a neighborhood. I know, especially with DOT, particularly like bridges and so on and so forth, they're very careful to have their meetings in a close by arena for conversations. So,
what I would also encourage. Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Rogers. What I would also encourage you to do is to drive through the neighborhood and also ask Mr. Pristash to drive you through the neighborhood. You know, a couple of you, two at a time, and he can give you a drive-through rundown of what he's thinking and why. That way, you know, we're asking for $20 million, and I don't want to ask for that unless there is 100% buy-in from city council and you know what it's why they're doing it and the reasons behind it. Mr. Clayworth.
Mayor, just to back that up, you know, if I were sitting out there as a legislator and I saw number three, two sentences on $20 million, I'd probably ignore it. I'd be blunt. But when we used to do this, we used to have like a page written up showing why it's $20 million, what you're doing with that $20 million, and a lot more detail to it. So if Bob has that information, we might want to strengthen this up a lot on this sheet. And the same with the other big projects, if they want to do that, to strengthen them up a little bit.
If we were to remove one, I'd say right now we'd remove the fire station because we have the least knowledge on that. We don't even have a defined location. So if we were to remove one, it would be right now, it'd be the fire station. We're trying to get as much information as we can for that. For January or February presentation to the federal delegation. Right now, it's the weakest of the three, to tell you the truth. So ponder that, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, you might. Well, I mean, we know we're not going to probably get any of these, with the exception of maybe the first one, because million bucks might be a short list.
Exactly.
But it might behoove us to eliminate something here. Yeah,
that's what's before you, and that's why you can amend it or adjust it or add to it. Mr. Ringstead.
Well, I agree with Jerry 100%. I mean, we got half a page of information asking for over $50 million. You know, that I think isn't going to float, but we can dress it up later. But I think realistically we need to target.
Okay.
We're not going to just get $50 million probably.
Again, at our next council meeting, be looking at that, and you can adjust it however you want. You're the city council. Anything else before we go on? Okay. Let's go to item number 5, resolution 5084, resolution in support of continuing to hold local elections in the early October. And as I reported, I believe at Thursday's assembly meeting, they will be Tammy Wilson, Assemblymember Tammy Wilson, will be introducing a resolution or an ordinance to change the local election. And here's the whereases. They've looked at doing it 2 years ago, I believe, and it did not pass. They pulled it. And so these are the whereases on it. And then, therefore, be resolved. My name's on it if anyone else wants to, and so is Mr. Clayworth. If anyone else wants to put in another whereas with items of why this does not work for the city of Fairbanks, you're more than welcome. And then I would believe that once the resolution is adopted, I will be presenting this in person at an assembly meeting and taking questions on it. Ms. Rogers.
I'd like my name added to this. We discussed this at length of why.
Yeah.
And Danny has given us a tremendous amount of comment and information regarding why. And I'm very supportive of this.
Ms. Martin, too?
We fought this battle last year.
So it's here it is again. Mr. Ringstead.
I guess for Danny, so the borough goes forward and decides they want to do theirs in November. So then we have two sets of local elections, ours in October, theirs in November?
If the council does nothing, then yes.
Well, that ought to confuse the voters.
And the reason why the reason I want you all to think of this, and you probably know it, but the reason why the October election works for us is because our fiscal year and our budget, and you bring in a council member, and they immediately on the budget, and they learn the governances of the city so well through a budget. That's why this so works for us. Now, if we go to November, you have to think about, okay, do we go to the federal or the state year of July 1? These are thoughts and ramifications. Mr. Ringstead.
You know, I guess coming in last year in October, and I think Sue and Crystal had the same thing. I mean, we had 6 weeks to get a budget done. Mm-hmm. If you have an election in November, by the time you get the election results and you're sworn in, you've got about 3 weeks. So we pretty much have to change our fiscal year. In my mind, I mean, you change out two seats, and maybe some years you'll change out a mayor, and so half your group is changed, and you can't do that in 3 weeks and make mm-hmm. good judgments. I mean, I felt like I was flying by the seat of my pants last year doing it in 6 weeks.
I agree with a whole host of your comments there. I've been saying that ever since I got here.
Yeah. So any other thoughts on that before we move on?
I'll just clarify. This was actually introduced already on September 28th at the borough, so I believe second reading is October 12th at the borough assembly.
Okay.
I think I can double check that, but I'm pretty certain.
So, okay. So let's start rapidly working on this. Yes, Mr. Ringstead.
So there's second reading, so they're going to finalize and vote this week?
Next week.
So
after our meeting Monday.
Yeah. So we'll have time, and if you're at a post-election event tonight and you see some assembly members there, you might want to work on them a little bit.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Of course, without violating the Open Meetings Act.
You can go into a restaurant and see your friends. We're in Fairbanks, but don't violate that.
Having ribs together.
Yeah. Anything else before we go on? Seeing none. Margarita, Finance Committee.
Good morning, Council Member and Mayor. Just to let you know that the Finance Committee is scheduled to meet on October the 12th at 7 a.m. We'll be in the Felix Pedro Room. We're starting to look at the capital fund at this next meeting and start addressing that future funding for the capital fund and what future projects look like and how we can address funding those projects in the future. So that's all I have.
Could you give a rundown of the dates for the different budgetary items?
For the council
and myself and when the people are coming to me.
Okay. The mayor will start his budget discussions this week. We'll start off with revenues on Thursday, and on Friday we'll look at the general accounts, IT. We will look at general accounts, IT, finance, and the mayor's budget on Friday. All next week, we'll start meeting with the various departments. We're starting off with police and
you
public works on Monday. And then we'll work through that week with the various departments. And hopefully, we will have a wrap-up meeting the third week in October and hopes to have the budget before you and ready to go in November. And then in November, we have multiple dates selected. We have not finalized what departments would speak in at what time, but we'll have a council budget orientation. I know it's something that you look at once a year on the 2nd of November, and we'll just kind of go through the book, talk about some of those little nuances that we have. My goal is for you to have your budget books ready to go by the 1st of November. The mayor's has until the 31st, that Tuesday, to publish his budget. And then we have scheduled meetings throughout the week of November the 6th. We have the 6th, the 8th, then we're looking at the 9th. The 10th is a holiday. And then the week of the 12th, we're looking at the 14th, 15th, and 17th. And I think we'll complete everything by the 17th of November and have the 20th, 21st, which is a work session, on the 22nd if needed, to do a wrap-up and discussion. And the first reading will be scheduled for November the 27th. So that just kind of gives you an overview of the budget. We're just moving along, and we'll see where everything falls. Thank you.
Any questions for Margarita? Thank you for the report. Mayor and City Council members' comments. We'll start with Ms. Rogers.
I've already commented. Thank you.
Mr. Clearworth. Mr. Ringstead. Mr. Marnie.
I'm likewise. Great meeting.
Well, my comments are very fine working with you again. Some items I need to get to you or your information so you can make deliberated decisions. Mr. Ringstead, Mr. Marnie, good luck today. No matter what happens, it's been a pleasure working with you, and I hope to work with you more, no matter what. Next regular work session is Tuesday, October 17th, 2023, 2 weeks from today. Any items left unsaid?
I just have a couple questions about sponsorship. I was trying to make quick notes as we went through here. Can I just ask, Ordinance 6263, that's the order of business. I'm adding Mr. Marnie and Ms. Rogers. Is that correct?
Mr. Clearworth, too, I believe.
Okay.
Okay.
Resolution 5083, that's legislative and capital priorities. I'm adding Mr. Marnie and Ms. Rogers. And the elections resolution, I'm adding Ms. Rogers and Mr. Marnie. And Mr. Ringstead, thank you.
We're adjourned. Thank you very much.